Here's Andy Udman.
Well, we have a new policy in the London hospitals that gives options to our staff. We obviously would like all our staff to get the influenza shot to protect both themselves and patients. But we realize there are some people who, for various reasons, do not wish to get the influenza shots.
Well, you mentioned the perfect word there, assumption. Well, you know, a lot of people are assuming that the flu shot actually works, when indeed a lot of research today is showing that it doesn't work.
So this year, we've provided an option which protects our patients and our staff and allows them not to get the shot if they do not wish to.
Coercion and forcing public ridicule on human beings is usually the practice of tyrants. That's essentially what's going on here. They're just trying to shame these people into getting a flu shot, assuming that the flu shot actually works. But these nurses have been doing the research, and they're saying, you know what, we want to use the precautionary principle. There's enough evidence to show that these flu shots don't work, and they do not want to inject these chemicals into their bodies.
Folks, I feel sorry for you this morning. I really do. My heart goes out to you. Here you have Steve Garrison getting his flu shot on the air this morning from one of the top officials at your local hospital, Dr. Michael John. Steve was a big boy. He didn't cry. Ryan held his hand. He has survived. He's walking around. He's healthy. So flu shots are good. Flu shots are from God, aren't they? Everybody should have one. I heard Dr. Marla Shapiro on CTV yesterday. Everybody should have one. Right next to apple pie, blueberry pie, and going to the beach, and God and the Queen, is the vaccine for flu. Then you have the lady that Steve Garrison calls the crazy lady, and she takes great pride in that, Pam Colleen, who says, nobody. Pam, is that right? Nobody.
I don't see any reason for it, Andy.
Nobody should get the flu shot. And we have an author this morning who we're about to meet, who basically, Pam, says that we're buying a product from organized crime.
Yeah. Just look at the rap sheet from companies like GlaxoSmithKline. I mean, these guys have criminal records, and I don't understand how so many people can trust products coming from these companies.
Okay. So, folks, take a great big deep breath, then get yourself over to a phone and prove to us that you're smarter than Dr. Gucci and Pam Colleen and Andy Udman and all the rest and Michael John at the hospital, because you've made up your mind on vaccines. If you can do that, a high five to you, because a lot of people are confused. They're torn. And it's not just them. They have to make a decision on their children. They're under tremendous pressure from their schools, from their doctors, to get the flu shots. Others are saying, don't, you might get autism. There are all this rhetoric and all these warnings. So let me just start by saying, I feel sorry for you. So let's have a good discussion about it. The phone lines are open, folks, so we want your wisdom as we have this discussion. So Pam Colleen says nobody should get the flu shot. They start offering them, by the way, this weekend, so the timing of all of this is perfect. Pam Colleen, would you introduce our guest this morning?
Well, this morning I'm privileged to say that we have Dr. Peter Gucci on the line, and he is a medical doctor, a professor. He is an epidemiologist. He's got over 50 papers published in the top five scientific journals in the world, and he's joining us this morning from Copenhagen.
Doctor, good morning.
Good morning.
And what time is it in Copenhagen?
It's around 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Do a little national bragging this morning. You've heard of Canada. You've heard we have Mounties. We have hockey. What do you have in Denmark?
Oh, we have good spirits, just like the Canadians have.
What's that? You have what?
Good spirits?
Good spirits, yes.
Good spirits.
Yes, that's
Denmark,
right.
Denmark is a good place to live, doctor?
Yeah, we come out as number one in happiness in poll after poll, which is pretty weird when you think of our weather.
That's true.
I was going to ask you about that. I thought of that poll which came out. Denmark's at the top, and I'm thinking that's why I asked you the question. What are we missing? What is so great about Denmark before we get into this nasty subject we're about to talk about?
Oh, we have a very long tradition for personal freedom, which is incredibly important for people. I believe that this is a major contributor to this.
Doctor, if you don't mind, we're starting the discussion this morning by focusing on flu shots, because that's a big, hot issue, and it segues so nicely into what we're going to invite you to talk about in just a moment. But the phone lines are already smoking. I want to take a couple of calls. Ben, your thoughts on flu shots and on vaccines generally.
Well, yes, good morning. Well, vaccine generally, I've probably had whatever anybody else has had over the years. But on the flu shot side, I worked at London Life back in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And they instituted flu shots for their employees back in the early 1970s. So since for about the last 40 years, most of those years I've had a flu shot, and I'm scheduled to get one next week. And all I would say is, a person should just think about how they feel when they get the flu, when they do get the flu. A lot of people say, oh, I never get the flu. But on those times when you do, you feel like you're dying. And my attitude is, if it's going to give me just a little bit of a chance to not get it, I'm getting the flu shot.
Ben, I am delighted you called because I think you represent and you speak so well for the majority who get their flu shots. I hate the flu. I hate being intimate with porcelain. It is not fun. And so, you know what? They pump this stuff into my arm, and I'm just going to go by faith. Is that accurately summarizing your position?
Pretty much. You bet.
Okay. Yeah. How do you explain my situation where I've never had a flu shot, and I haven't had the flu since I was a kid?
Well, I think genes obviously count for a lot, and I think that you're a very fortunate guy. I have a son-in-law who has experienced that as well, been a healthy guy all his life. But boy, when he got the flu, he was laid up for 3 weeks.
Okay, Ben, you're a man, right? You're tough, and you can take it. You're a big boy. Hey. Pam is going to whisper some realities in your ear, which you may not have heard before, Pam.
Well, I'd like to get Dr. Gucha to speak about this simply because his colleague at the Cochrane Collaboration, Dr. Tom Jefferson, who has been on this show, they've compiled and gone through a lot of the research to show that there's very little research that actually shows the efficacy of the flu shot.
Doctor, would you hold Ben's hand for just a moment and be gentle with him, but tell him the reality in your world about flu shots?
Well, it's pretty funny because I have worked in infectious diseases, and yet I've never had a flu shot because my risk of getting influenza is quite low, and I also know the scientific evidence, and based on that, I'm not one of those who get the flu shot, and my chief of department didn't get one either.
Okay, what would you say the science says about the effectiveness of flu shots?
I don't know the science by heart, but I have studied it, and I concluded that this was not for me.
Okay, but what about for Ben and for our listeners generally? What would you say?
Oh, it's a very personal choice because the risk of getting influenza is quite small. And the effect of the shot is not terribly impressive. So you need to decide for yourself, really.
Mm-hmm. But you've done research in a lot of other areas of medicine as well. And this is a lot of the focus of your new book, which is Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. So you're talking about greater than just vaccines in your book.
Doctor, I'm going to jump in because that name of that book just cries out for a lot of punctuation. I mean, here's a book, folks, and Ben will get back to you in just a moment. Here's a book called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. Ben, how does that make you feel?
Well, you can take any situation, I think, and find somebody who's going to say, hey, it doesn't count for anything, taking vitamins. Well, the proof is they don't do anything for you, whatever the cure is that people seem to have had, whether it's an old wives' tale or whether it's an old family remedy, or whether it's what has been put out as legitimate scientific proof that it's going to help your sore throat or whatever it is, there's always somebody that's going to come along and say, hey, we've done studies. That doesn't do anything.
Yeah, Ben, I appreciate the call. We're going to move to Tim, who's been waiting patiently. Tim, go ahead.
Hi, Andy. Okay, on my experience, I'm 51 years old. I used to get the flu like clockwork every December. November, December, well, let's say December to January. For the last 7 years, my family, we have had the flu shot every year. Have not had the flu since then. There's my experience, okay, for that. I do believe it works. There's likely some risk, risk with everything. But I do believe it works on those, what I just explained to you there. Also, vaccinations have saved the world. Polio. There's an example of that group down in the States just recently, an outbreak, and was it polio or some disease that we haven't heard of for a long time, but but all of them don't believe in vaccinations, and they never got a vaccination for whatever this was, measles or polio or what. It was a pretty serious disease. Outbreak. And the whole one thing that regarding all of them is they didn't take these vaccinations. So do they work? Absolutely. They work.
There's a lot of people out there that would question the efficacy of the polio vaccine, including how they changed the definition of polio.
Well, I don't know if polio. It was polio or not. But it was in the news just very recently, and it was this group. And they refused vaccinations, a religious group. And all of them had the serious that what we take in our vaccinations every 10 years that we never hear of getting here.
Doctor, would you, Tim, if you don't mind, I'll bounce your comments over to the doctor for his response. Go ahead, doctor.
I agree. We have some terrific vaccines. We have eradicated smallpox with vaccination. We have the MFR vaccination and so on. So I'm very sorry that we have these anti-vaccine movements that are not founded in good science.
Mm-hmm. But your colleague, Tom Jefferson, though, he's and others at the Cochrane Collaboration have found a lot of holes in the flu vaccine itself.
But I haven't had the flu in 7 years. I used to get it like clockwork. Mm-hmm. And here's another fact. My two sons, one goes to RMC and the other one goes studies corrections St. Lawrence. Then they left the house. We used to get the flu shot every year. And when they left the house, guess what? Like teenagers, they forget to do everything. They didn't get the vaccination, the flu vaccine the next year. Guess what? They got the flu.
Tim, let me ask you this before we let you go. Steve Garrison had his flu shot this morning. I did not. I won't. He did. Who do you think is going to get the flu first?
Well, now, Andy, you said that you haven't had the flu, right? Well, first of all, to answer your questions, I don't know. How's that? But you said you never had the flu. I'm
well, not for
Andy,
a long, long time.
Do you hang around with kids a lot?
Do I hang around with kids a lot?
They are the carriers. And if you have a lot of kids in your family, you're very wise to get the flu shot.
Would you say
you're not around a lot of kids all the time? Then
would you say having
chances are pretty low that you are going to get it?
Would you say having
three carriers? Unfortunately,
would you say having three sons, each of them with about 35 friends, would qualify me for getting the flu? Yeah. Anyway, I get your point, Tim, and I appreciate your call, and I really appreciate both of those calls because I think those are pretty typical attitudes in London, Ontario. Let's go to Cam, and then we'll get into some serious stuff with the doctor. Go ahead, Cam.
Hi, Andy. I've had a flu shot every year for 10 years. Right previous to that, before 2 years before getting a flu shot, I had flu half the winter. So finally, and I didn't want the flu shot. Finally, I got convinced to take it. I've never had the flu since.
Okay, so what's your theory on flu shots?
I think for old men like you and me, we should get them.
Easy with the old men thing, okay?
Say hello to Pam Colleen for me.
Okay, there we go. Let's go to Ann. Ann, your comment.
I called in yesterday, and I thought they were great to prevent disease control. In view of what your guests are saying, I'm going to look into it, because what bothers me more than anything is the organized crime.
Mm-hmm. Do you trust companies like GlaxoSmithKline?
Well, not just them. I know it's another topic, but they've also infiltrated child welfare, and they're using foster kids as guinea pigs for drug experiments, and that's Eli Lilly.
Mm-hmm.
And that started, I'm sure you're aware of that, down in New York, and now we have this here. So that is there's a lot of concerns, but that is a huge concern for me. I don't want to support corrupt drug companies.
That's
okay,
right.
Anne, I really appreciate the call. I'm sorry, we just have had such great response to the whole flu issue. I do want to focus, though, on Dr. Gucci. Doctor, let's hear your... the name of your book just shocked me. Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. We're just going to listen as you explain what you mean by that shocking title.
Last year, I found out that prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. And this means that we are not good enough at using drugs and at researching them, and we use far too many drugs, because half of all these deaths occur even when patients do exactly what they are told, that they use their drugs in the correct dose and so on. And yet it is the third leading cause of death. And one reason for this is that the drug industry hides many of the serious harms of their drugs in clinical trials, and above all, they hide them in their marketing.
What you have just said is absolutely and totally shocking. And I think we need just a moment to let it sink in with our audience, because in just a few moments we have to take a short news break, and then in the next half hour we're going to just give you all the time you need to expound on that. But again, you're saying that the leading cause of death is heart disease or cancer?
Yeah.
Well, no, which one is it?
Heart disease.
Heart disease is
cancer,
number...
And then drugs.
And then prescription
drugs.
Pam,
right?
that simple one minute we've just heard is absolutely shocking.
Yes, it's shocking. I mean, these drugs are supposed to be on the marketplace to improve the quality of our lives.
Doctor, would you hang your entire credibility on the truth of what you just said in the last minute?
Of course. I have references for this fact. One from the U.S. and one from Norway, one from the European Union. It's actually a fact.
Mm-hmm. And you have endorsements from two editors from very prominent journals, from JAMA and from the British Medical Journal. You have two editors endorsing your book.
Yes, and I'm not the first one who has alerted people to the fact that our prescription drugs are a major killer. I have just collected a lot of evidence in a book.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, doctor, I mean, people right now are practically driving off the road here in London, Ontario, because they're thinking, wait a minute, there's a Shoppers Drug Mart on the corner of Commissioners and Wonderland. You drive a little further down Wonderland, there's another Shoppers Drug Mart on the corner of Wonderland and Southdale. Holy smokes, they're almost like Tim Hortons. These drug stores are everywhere, and you're saying prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death out there?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. I'm just going to give our audience a moment to absorb the enormous significance of what you said, and then we're going to start to pick away at the specifics of the implications of that. What are you saying about prescription drugs? They're evil by their very nature, or we need to be more selective, or we need to do our homework, or we shouldn't be trusting our doctors. Just before we go to the break, Pam, what do you think he's going to say in that regard? Do we just say drugs are bad?
He's not anti-drug. He's just saying we need to be more cautious in terms of the use of the drug. He's a colleague and knows Dr. David Healy, whom we've had on the show several times, and he's been very vocal and said, I'm not anti-drug. I just think we're just using these things too indiscriminately. They're just too broad-based out
there. There's a pill for everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's no pill for talk show hosts facing a break. We have to take the break, folks, for a short news update, and then we'll be back with this shocking reality. Number one killer out there, heart disease. Number two, cancer. Number three, prescription drugs. Oh, my goodness. I better go and take a pill to help me cope with that reality. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 or a drink, CJBK.
Last year, I found out that prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. And this means that we are not good enough at using drugs and at researching them, and we use far too many drugs, because half of all these deaths occur even when patients do exactly what they are told, that they use their drugs in the correct dose and so on, and yet it is the third leading cause of death. And one reason for this is that the drug industry hides many of the serious harms of their drugs in clinical trials, and above all, they hide them in their marketing.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Folks, I'm asking you today, can you handle the truth of what you just heard? Our guest this morning, a world-renowned doctor and researcher, suggesting that while heart disease is the number one killer, cancer number two, prescription drugs number three. Pam, that truth in itself just demands some questions and answers about why that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. There are 17,000 drugs on the marketplace today, Andy. And like I said earlier, they're supposed to be improving the quality of our lives. It just doesn't seem to be happening.
Okay, doctor, we're back with Dr. Peter Gutcha. Doctor, have your say on this issue. I'm sure that this is a message that is screaming to be heard. Share it with us, if you would.
Yes, but I must say also that, as you know, many drugs are also very beneficial for us. We should not forget that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that we have a man-made epidemic that is almost as bad as our tobacco epidemic.
Right. And we're seeing some very similar marketing schemes that the tobacco industry used and how that was the blueprint for a lot of the sales and the techniques that the drug industry is using today. So when you wrote your book, you dug very, very deeply. Your book is extremely thorough and you go into a lot of detail. But you go into some of the corrupt business practices. You talk about some of the companies and how they're using these corrupt business practices today. Can you talk a little bit about what you're witnessing as a physician, as a researcher, as an epidemiologist?
Yes. The world's biggest drug company, Pfizer, was found guilty by a jury of organized crime and a conspiracy. And I studied the 10 biggest drug companies and found out that they did exactly the same as Pfizer does.
What are some of the other companies, Doctor?
Oh, these are the biggest ones, like Merck, Eli Lilly, AstraZeneca, and so on.
And why aren't people going to jail? These are companies that have criminal records, and is anybody going to jail?
This is terribly wrong that we don't put people into jail. And I have some colleagues in the drug industry that would like to see their CEOs in jail, just like I would. So in order to get to the root of this, we simply need to sentence the top guys to jail. That's the only thing that will work.
Well, the fines into the billions of dollars are just a slap on the wrist, correct?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. For example, Pfizer got a huge fine, which was a very tiny fraction of all the money they had earned on the crimes. So the crimes have actually accelerated in recent years because the companies have found out that crime pays.
Doctor, I wonder if we can take just a moment just to break down the title of your book in individual segments and get your comment on each segment. Your book is called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. Let's take those in four parts. Deadly medicines. Give us an example.
I have studied arthritis drugs a great deal, drugs like Vioxx, and these drugs kill an enormous amount of people. And most of these people even don't need the drugs because they can be treated with something else or they can avoid treatment altogether. I mean, if you have a tennis elbow or a sore knee, you actually don't need a drug, particularly not if we remember to tell the patients how dangerous these drugs are, that you can die from a heart attack or you can die from a bleeding ulcer. So these drugs are used to a tremendous extent, and they are very, very harmful. So they provide a major part of all these avoidable deaths.
Okay, now Vioxx has, of course, been yanked from the market. Give us one that we're still dealing with.
Yes, we have a drug marketed by Pfizer, which is called, what is it called in Canada? It is Celecoxib, Celebrex, or something like that.
Celebrex,
okay, yeah.
I see it on ABC News every night.
It's still on the market, and I have estimated that it has led to the death of tens of thousands of patients, just like Vioxx.
I see it advertised every night on ABC News, and you're saying this is a drug that has killed tens of thousands of people?
Yes.
Wow. Did those people have other options?
Oh, yes. Most of them didn't need a painkiller at all. And those who did need a painkiller, they could get away fine with paracetamol, a drug that won't kill you.
Okay, now you've mentioned Vioxx, you've mentioned Celebrex. Your book is called Deadly Medicines. How many of the familiar prescription drugs out there would you put in this list as having a long list of people they have actually killed?
Well, I can mention another area that is highly lethal, and this is psychotropic drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the elderly are very often treated with not even one, but several psychotropic drugs. It can be an antidepressant, and it can be other types of drugs. And we know that these drugs, they influence balance. And if you fall and break a hip, a quarter of such patients, they will actually die from it. So we are overdosing our elderly to an unbelievable extent with psychotropic drugs. That's another major killer.
And you also talk about it with regards to the homicidal and suicidal thoughts. In fact, you have an entire chapter in the book that's dedicated to the overdrugging of children and how some of these drugs are used in children when they really shouldn't be.
Yes, this is one of the worst chapters in my book about drug companies pushing our children into suicide with so-called happiness pills, the antidepressant drugs.
Okay, let me go through the other segments of the of your book title, as I promised I would. Okay, we've dealt with deadly medicines, organized crime. That's a pretty strong phrase, doctor, to be using for drug companies, but you make no apologies.
No, because I've studied the issues, and I have studied the U.S. law about organized crime. Organized crime is about doing the same sort of crimes,
yes, but
repeatedly.
Not for a minute or two, if you can hang on.
And these crimes can be fraud, they can be kickbacks and other forms of corruption, they can be obstruction of evidence and such sort of things. And this is what drug companies do routinely.
Now, but you've also been on record with regards to what's happened with Roche and Tamiflu, how they, you know, when they were approached for the raw data, the raw material, the researchers suddenly couldn't find the raw material, and you're asking for more transparency. How are we going to make these companies more accountable in terms of the availability of their actual research?
Well, I have called in the British Medical Journal for a worldwide boycott of Roche because they have committed what I regard as the biggest theft in European history by claiming that Tamiflu reduced serious complications of influenza, and the FDA in the States forbid Roche to come with such claims, but in Europe they were accepted. And it's highly likely that Tamiflu is no better than aspirin or paracetamol, but it's a terribly expensive version of paracetamol and aspirin.
Well, that is shocking to think that we've spent multi-millions on Tamiflu. You're saying aspirin is dramatically cheaper and more effective. And just to continue and to wrap up my deciphering of the title of your book called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. What do you mean Big Pharma has corrupted healthcare?
I detail this a lot in my book. The drug companies try to buy everyone with an influence. And they, of course, start with the professors like me, but I'm not on industry payroll. And then they go down the list and take chief of departments and so on. And they buy them in that way that either they pay kickbacks and bribe them, or they do it indirectly by putting them on some advisory board or hiring them as consultants. And I can give you one example. The American company Forest, that markets antidepressant drugs, had 19,000 doctors on their advisory board. 19,000. In my opinion, this looks like corruption.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. We're going to go to the phones briefly. Try to keep your comments brief, folks, because we have so much we want to hear from Dr. Gutcha. Eunice, go ahead.
Yes, I'd just like the doctor's opinion on a drug called Wellbutrin and thyroxamine.
Doctor, go ahead.
Do you have any opinion?
Well,
you...
I'm a little reluctant to talk about individual drugs, and you use company names, whereas I use generic names. So when you say Wellbutrin, I suppose you mean an antidepressant drug.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. These antidepressant drugs, the companies have cheated with their trials to an unbelievable extent with these drugs. So in reality, the effect of them on depression, for example, is far smaller than what the drug industry has published in our leading medical journals, and also the risk of committing suicide when you take the drugs is far larger than what the companies have told us in their published trials. So I would be hesitant to give anyone an antidepressant drug, which is not the same as saying that they are never useful. Some people feel they are helpful, but they are also dangerous drugs. It's not only children and adolescents that can commit suicide or homicide when they take these drugs. It's also adults.
Eunice, I appreciate the call. Let's go to David. David, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Well, Doctor, you've certainly alluded to about the actual evidence that's presented as to the effectiveness of these drugs. The criteria that I'd be curious about, and maybe you have mentioned it, in order to get a drug approved in, say, North America, how large does your study have to be, and how many individuals, what percentage does this drug have to have a positive effect in order for it to be actually approved? I'm always amazed to hear at all the side effects and all the fine print written on these drugs. And I'm wondering, so is it, does a drug only have to be effective for 5%, 10% to get an approval rate? So do people know that maybe this drug is only going to work in 1 in 20 people? I'm not sure what that number is. I'll hang up and listen to your response, and thank you very kindly.
David, thank you. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah. You can get a drug approved if you have shown in 2 placebo-controlled trials that it works. So the effect can be very small and maybe non-existent. So if you study very many patients, you can get a positive result, although the average effect is very, very small. So the demands for having new drugs approved are actually quite low.
Doctor, let me ask you before we have to take a short break. Well, let me just ask you, what is the worst example that you've seen on this question of drug companies testing a drug and then lying about the results, contaminating the results, throwing out the results, and getting that drug on the market?
There are many competitors here, but one of the things that move me most is when we kill our children and push them into committing suicide at the same time as the drug companies have stubbornly refused to acknowledge that their drugs have exactly this effect. This is just as terrible as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it took far too many years before our authorities admitted that these drugs can, in themselves, lead to suicide. We must remember that these drugs are chemically related to amphetamine, and they work like amphetamine, and they have been implicated in very many school shootings in the United States and elsewhere. These are dangerous drugs.
Wow. Joanne, a quick comment, if you would.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. First time I've called. I have no shock. I'm not shocked about this. I've probably thought that for years. It's just the system has been set up that we have no choice. Some medical plans don't pay for Tylenols, but they'll pay for Celebrex and stuff like that. And also the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't pay for alternative medicines such as chiropractors or herbalists. So a lot of us are kind of stuck with taking these.
Right. I think that's the big issue. We've had so many guests on the show, a lot of medical doctors and scientists and so on, and they want to see a better system is what they want to see. They want to see improvements in the system because they see that the system is broken. And from what I can gather, Dr. Gucha, it just seems to me that this is a call to action. Your book is a call to action to say the system needs fixing. Am I correct?
The system has been completely corrupted. We need a revolution in how we research and approve and use drugs. You are absolutely correct.
Sure.
And there have been many books before mine, so I'm not alone here.
Joanne, quick comment before we let you go.
Yep. Oh, like I said, it's just some people have no choice.
Very frustrating. I appreciate the call.
It's going to take a concerted effort to fix this problem.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you folks, what do you think we spend in Canada on prescription drugs, the third biggest killer out there after heart disease and cancer? I think you'll be shocked by the figure. When we come back in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Okay, here we go. If you remember nothing else from this program, folks, I want you to remember this 40 seconds of Dr. Peter Gucha. Here we go.
Last year, I found out that prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. And this means that we are not good enough at using drugs and at researching them, and we use far too many drugs, because half of all these deaths occur even when patients do exactly what they are told, that they use their drugs in the correct dose and so on, and yet it is the third leading cause of death. And one reason for this is that the drug industry hides many of the serious harms of their drugs in clinical trials, and above all, they hide them in their marketing.
Unbelievable. Josie, I'm only going to give you 20 seconds, but we are going to get you on. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to state that my own family doctor won't even consider alternative methods for chronic pain or any medical condition. She just prefers to get out the prescription pad and write a prescription.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for that. Josie, your comment, doctor, on Josie's comment?
Well, I can say what I do personally. I never take an arthritis drug. I consider it too dangerous compared to the pain I sometimes have.
Mm-hmm. And, doctor, with your book, have you got any speaking engagements? Are the hospitals, are the universities inviting you to come and speak, to talk about your findings?
I would love to do that because I would like to change the world, if only a little bit. And that was why I wrote the book. And I actually gave some talks at Georgetown University in Washington and at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore last month. So I would love to go back to North America and also to Canada to give some talks.
Let's take the last minute, Pam, to focus on where people can get this vital information. The book, again, is called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare.
Right.
Now, you said someone's already, you talked to someone who's already read
the book. Somebody in my Facebook group is already reading your book, and it's published through Radcliffe Publishing, and the website is radcliffehealth.com. Is it available on Amazon as yet, doctor?
Oh, yes, it has been available for a month, and it's currently being translated into quite some languages.
And for my friend Jerry, can he walk down to
The phone number I have for Radcliffe Publishing is 1-800-247-6553, 1-800-247-6553. So there is a phone number. I assume that's a North American phone number. So, you could also call just directly to the publisher.
Or can you go to the chapters and get this book at some point?
I suspect right now the book is so new, I suspect it's probably just a good idea to call chapters and ask them to order some.
Doctor, I can't believe how quickly the hour has gone by. Dr. Peter Gutcha, the book is called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. Can you imagine the guts alone to write that book? Dr. Peter, we thank you so much for your time this morning, and say hello to all the good folks in Denmark.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
We'll have to have you back again. Wow.
Yeah.
He was incredible.
Amazing. Yeah, we'll have him back on for sure.
Very,
it's a big
very
subject.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Just the title alone, Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. I thought you were scary with some of the stuff you say.
Well, I'm teaching again next week, by the way.
Okay.
I've got two more classes coming up this month, the next two Wednesdays,
and
on the decline of human sexuality, why we're seeing so many problems with erectile dysfunction, infertility, low birth weight babies, birth defects, and so on.
You mean all those commercials I'm seeing on ABC for the solution to all those aren't working?
Yeah. If you're interested in coming to the classes, my website, pamkaleen.com, and just click on upcoming events.
Terrific. 11 o'clock news. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.